Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is This Week in iPhone, episode 79 for March 22nd, 2010. The iPhone Chatcast. This podcast is brought to you by GoToAssist. For your free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/Ally. All right, it's time for the iPhone Chatcast. I'm just trying it out. It's Michael Johnston here, and Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer, and Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, guys.
Hey. I like Chatcast.
Yeah, yeah, Chatcast. I just came up with it about 5 minutes ago. So this is where we talk about the iPhone, the iPad, iPod Touch, the App Store, and some other stuff that we decide to talk about as we're going along. Because that's what we do. We're the Chatcast, right now anyway. We're still working on the name, so if you're just joining us, we used to be, what were we? iPhone Alley Podcast?
Oh, right, right.
And then This Week in iPhone, and then we're working on a new name, because people have said that maybe not This Week in iPhone.
So now, I saw on Twitter that you did get a vote for iPhone Palooza.
Did we?
Yes.
I like that. I'm a fan of the Chicago music festival Lollapalooza, so maybe we could do that.
Lollapalooza actually is pretty cool.
It is. It's pretty sweet. Looks like the lineup is going to be pretty good this year. They're going to have the Flaming Lips.
So nice.
Maybe we can get the Flaming Lips by proxy or something.
I think that's a completely different kind of Flaming Lips that you're thinking of. And you'll probably need penicillin.
Oh boy. Oh man. So we're here to talk about the iPhone and the iPod Touch and all that stuff, and we're not going to cut that out, but I have let's talk about some of the feedback we've been getting. So I've asked our listeners to email in or Twitter in or some other way of contacting me. The email address is podcast@iphonealley.com. And so far, the feedback has been generally, let's move away from This Week In, because that's what people, you know, people think Leo Laporte when they hear This Week In. So we're going to stray away from that and go with something else, like maybe iPhone Chatcast. So if you like that, send me a twitter.com/Michael Johnston or an email podcast@iphonealley.com. Let us know. Maybe you have a suggestion. I also asked you guys about swearing on the podcast, and I actually got a fantastic email from one of the listeners regarding that, and let's just say it was positive. It was pro swearing, but I'm not one to swear a lot in
yeah. Oh wait,
that was unexpected.
That was the best F-bomb since I dropped one in my niece's kindergarten class.
Well, how did we decide we were going to have a safe word? We're going to say banana before we say a swear word. If we say it after, does that count?
No.
Okay.
No.
Banana.
Banana. Oh. I'll bleep it out this time. Should I bleep it out?
I don't care.
Okay. I'll think about it.
Adam's the racy one.
Yeah, Adam's now the racy one. Okay, so we're talking about the iPhone. Let's move right along. Here's an interesting story.
Because I'm curious and I can't wait. So far, have you gotten feedback on the name, and is there a front runner? Is it Chatcast?
I just came up with that. Nobody else suggested that to me. People were suggesting let's go the way of focusing more on the iPhone OS rather than just the iPhone itself. So maybe. I understand the thought behind that. I definitely understand why you want to do that, because that encompasses the iPhone, the iPod, and the iPad.
That makes sense.
You know, you might want to be careful with the Chatcast, because there's another podcast that sounds really close to that, and the guy that owns the name might get pissed off, because there's a show called the MacCast.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met the guy that runs that show.
And he drops F-bombs randomly on other people's podcasts.
All over your ass.
Because I can't do it on mine. So I've got to have an outlet somewhere.
So this is what we have become.
No, that's cool. On the focusing on that, I just don't know what the general term for that would be.
For what?
Apple Device Cast.
Oh,
Apple
yeah.
Mobile.
Apple Mobile Cast, something like that. I think that was one of the suggestions. But if you have a suggestion, you want to riff off the chat cast, send it in, podcast@iPhoneLA.com. That's the email address. And with that, I think we're good, right? We're going to move into the iPhone, the news stories, the topics of the week.
Oh, I thought we were absolutely. Done. We're going on to our picks.
Our picks. Oh, yeah.
There's more?
There is more, yes. Okay. This story, I think, is my favorite story of the week, and I don't know why, because maybe I'm just mean. But Apple is removing screen protectors from the Apple stores in the online store. They're getting rid of screen protectors for the iPhone, the Macs, anything that's a screen protector. They're also getting rid of, I think it's just everything that adheres to any Apple products, right? So even like Jello skins, I don't know if those are in the Apple store.
Oh, they're getting rid of skins too?
Yeah, and according to Macworld, what they have been told is that anything that adheres to an Apple product is being removed. And I think there's specific attention to screen protectors because, you know, this might be to prepare for the iPad. You know, saying
you know,
that...
The screen protector thing, to a degree, I can understand because I've heard anecdotal information that says that screen protectors can damage the oleophobic coating that you have on the iPhone 3GS.
It's also on the iPad too, which is sweet because that's a good thing to have.
Oh, that's awesome because I'm totally planning on laying my face on my iPad every chance I get.
Well, you have oil on your fingers too. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Or do you have a special?
I guess I do.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's much better even if you don't hold it up to your face because it's easier to wipe the oil off or whatever gook you get on there because you're eating chocolate while you're using your iPad or whatever.
There's a joke in there. I'm not even going to touch it.
Let's not touch it.
Wait, did we just do that?
I think we did it.
Oh. Yeah, the touch it thing wasn't nearly as subtle as you thought.
Nope. Anyway, I didn't mean to do that. So,
yeah,
I've never been a fan of the screen protectors. I've always thought the iPhone screen is made of glass. What are you going to do? Get, you know, scratch it with a diamond? You know?
It is pretty, I mean, it's pretty rugged. I used to use the Invisible Shield, the Zag product, and I really, really liked it. And I ended up having to remove it when I needed to get a Mophie, a juice pack, because the tolerance, I don't know how thick that film is. And actually, this is another thing to point out because of the size difference between the iPad 3G plus Wi-Fi and the Wi-Fi, which I didn't think was going to be an issue. I thought it was kind of silly when that story came out. And I don't know, maybe this is related to the skins, but regardless, I was using the Zag. I had to take it off because I got a Mophie juice pack and it literally wouldn't fit with the film on there, even though the film was, you know, millimeters in thickness. And so I removed it and I have not had any problem with scratching anywhere on the device. And I don't use a case per se. I do have a kind of a hip holster, you know, that I take it out of, but I've dropped it. I very often just slide it in my back pocket or my front pocket. I usually try to be pretty careful about not having it in there with coins or keys or anything like that. But I mean, I don't have scratches on the front. And even with my iPhone 3GS, even the back plastic doesn't really scratch all that much.
You only notice it for me. I only notice it on the Apple logo because it's super shiny and you can tell when there's a scratch there. And I've never used a screen protector on my phone. And especially now that the 3GS has the oleophobic screen. My case of choice is the in-case slider. And for the most part, I only have it on there because I feel like I might drop my iPhone if I don't have it on there. I'm never going to drop it if I have the case on because that's how it works. You're not going to drop it. The first time you drop it is when you take it out of the case. So I just keep it in the case. Otherwise, I don't think that my pocket will scratch it up. And I generally keep everything out of the designated iPhone pocket anyway.
Right.
But
and so the point I wanted to make about the... You guys heard about the size difference, right? Between the...
No, I didn't.
iPad Wi-Fi. So the iPad Wi-Fi and then the iPad
Wi-Fi plus 3G.
3G. They came out with the FCC filing on the 3G one came out, and in that filing, people discovered that it's 0.1 millimeters taller and 0.3 wider. Everybody was like, oh, you know, they put that story out there. I'm like, oh, big deal. I mean, you're talking tenths of a millimeter. But then I started thinking about that problem I had had with the skin on my iPhone and the hard, you know, slider style case or any of those hard cases are, you know, they have pretty tight tolerances, but you wouldn't think that, you know, down to tenths of a millimeter. But I looked and I think the Zag film was like 0.2 millimeters and I could not get my iPhone with the Zag film on it to fit in the Mophie. So I'm just wondering about all these makers who have pre-made their iPad, you know, cases, and you're going to have a, if it's a hard case to a fine tolerance, they're going to have to do different versions for each iPad, even though they're like millimeters differences, or potentially they will, which just seems weird to me.
Yeah, I put a Jella skin or something like that on the back of my phone to try it out, and then I tried putting my in-case slider on there, and it didn't fit on there. So, but I'm not sure.
I've been lucky then, because I have music skins on my iPhone right now, and I have the Mophie Juice Pack, the one that's like the 3/4 wraparound, not full wraparound.
Yeah, that's the one I have.
That still fits, and my iFrog Lux case still fits too.
Do you like that iFrog's case? I've heard a lot of bad stuff about the iFrog's cases.
The iFrog's Lux is the only iPhone case that I have used long term.
Huh.
And when it first came out, there was an issue with the little tabs that are on the edge of the bottom part of the case where they would break off. And they have redesigned the case so it doesn't actually need those little side tabs anymore. And it works fine. And I trashed one when I accidentally sent my iPhone flying across a parking lot. The case was ruined, but my iPhone was fine.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's the only case that I go back to time and again.
Cool. Okay, so we're getting back to...
Well, yeah, so the other thing on the films that I think is a bigger deal is that anybody who sells just any other kind of case, so it doesn't affect just the skins and sort of the film-only cases, right? They're saying that any case that even includes like a screen protector film, which a lot of them do.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are going to be banned too, or not, or they're going to, or at least the manufacturer's going to have to take that film out of their package.
That's going to be a pain because if the film is one of the selling points of their product, they'll end up having to come up with two packaging models, one for the Apple Store and one for the rest of the world.
Do you think that manufacturers are going to do that, or do you think they're just going to stop selling the protective film thing?
Well, I can give you an example that I happen to know. In their retail stores, they only carry the small squarish box. Is it squarish or rectangular boxes for software?
Yeah,
so they have standards for all packaging.
Yeah, and if you want your stuff in there, you have to either redo your packaging or you don't get it in there. It's my understanding. That's what I've heard.
Makes sense to me.
So I would assume they can dictate it for cases too and say, look, you want your case in here? You got to not have the film in there.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I think that the reason that they're doing it, and Macworld points this out, is that it's pretty difficult to, at least with stuff like an invisible shield, it's pretty difficult to put it on there correctly. And so that the return rates are much higher for those products. And it also, I think we mentioned that it damages the oleophobic coating possibly.
Well, and another thing on the Zag films is if you know, because I've applied them, they have that spray. Mm-hmm. That you put on there. I mean, you have to get the thing wet. And I have to wonder, there's been all this issue about the debate over the moisture sensors, whether they're being tripped accidentally just from humidity and other things like that. I mean, I could see if someone gets that thing really wet and sliding it around, and I mean, you could get drops of liquid inside the, say, where the dock connector is or where the headphone jack is. And there's sensors inside those places, and they could be false tripping those things too.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another problem for returns and stuff like that. I didn't buy the thing that it was, you know, the marketing department getting their way because they want to show that the device, the materials are rugged enough that they don't need.
I don't buy that. But I don't buy that line either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We good on that? Let's move on to the iPad stuff.
Yeah.
Let's go to the iPad stuff. And even though we weren't talking about the iPad at all previously, Apple released beta 5 of the SDK for the iPad development. And Adam, you might know, Jeff, you might know, but it was my understanding that you can't develop iPhone applications with the 3.2 beta software, the beta SDK. Is that true? Because I've been seeing, I saw Tweety. Tweety 2 released with compatibility for 3.2 as well as some other applications. Are developers able to create apps using the 3.2 beta for the iPhone?
I thought they could.
Oh, okay. So it has the ability to do both. I know that the simulator has, I think it's 3.1 maybe for the iPhone and then 3.2 for the iPad.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought you could do both with the Beta 5 SDK. Hmm. And it would be kind of stupid for Apple to not do it that way, because then it becomes complicated for developers, because then they have to have two versions of the SDK installed.
Yeah, and you can't really do that. If you download the...
Not easily, no.
Yeah, you have to put it in different locations, and I don't know a whole lot about that stuff. But they've also sent out an email to all the developers saying that if you want your app featured in the iPad App Store on launch day, April 3rd, you have to get your apps in by March 27th. So if you're a developer, get those apps in. And it looks like they're going to give feedback on applications that are sent in prior to March 27th. So if you're not sure if it's going to get through, submit early, submit before the 27th. If you want to get it in and you're not sure, you'll be good to go.
Yeah, what I'm curious about on that is, does that mean, are they going to have a final? Because it seems like they've been really stepping up the release of the betas, right? We saw beta 4 just like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So are they going to have a finalized SDK before they developers submit their final apps, or are they going to be submitting apps off the beta build of the SDK?
They're submitting off the beta.
It's interesting.
Yeah, they have to be using SDK 3.2 beta 5. To submit apps for approval for the iPad if they want them to be available on April 3rd.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, you have to use beta tools to write applications for a device that you only have a software-based simulator for.
Wow.
Well,
was it that way when they did the iPhone apps initially?
No, because the iPhone was already out, and if you were a developer, you could install the special 2.0 software.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so this is a different world for developers, but there are some developers who are getting iPads before the iPad's out. According to, what was it, the Wall Street Journal Business Week, saying that some developers are getting early access. And this is what I generally have been hearing from bigger name developers when I went to Macworld. I know I went to, I don't know if I should name names. I don't think
I will.
Name
names.
I won't name names, but several larger companies that we've probably talked about in the past have said that they might get access to pre-release iPads. And that makes a lot of sense. They say that any developer who wants to do that, there's a 10-page confidentiality agreement, and they have to black out their windows and
sign over their firstborn child.
Mm-hmm, yeah, just as a deposit. And they also have to lock down the iPad to some, you know, I'm guessing the floor or a piece of furniture that's really stable in that room.
There's a giant chain that runs from Cupertino.
I thought they just sent an anvil up there.
30,000 miles long.
They send an anvil.
Through your blacked out tinfoil covered windows, under your grow lamps, and then over to the iPad.
Yeah, if you're a pot grower, then you're already good to go. You just chant it down.
Pot brokers meet the requirements to have an iPad.
This is true. That's a really good point.
Scott, you have to put Scott Forstall up in your house for 2.5 weeks and just stand over your shoulder the whole time.
That guy's...
You done yet? You done yet?
You know, I think if Apple did that to me, I would take off my clothes and just work completely naked to make things as uncomfortable for him as possible.
I think that's the best idea.
It's really disturbing when you think about it.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's kind of disturbing that they're sending Scott Forstall to your house to watch you write apps.
Yeah, and you know, I would have to tweet about it. Hey, everyone, I'm completely naked and Scott Forstall's looking at me.
Maybe that's part of the confidentiality agreement that you can't tweet about Scott Forstall at your house.
Well, you certainly can't tweet on the iPad.
Yeah.
I'd have to say something like, hey, everyone, I'm completely naked and SF is looking at my redacted.
Yeah. Well, there were a couple tweets, right, that came from iPad-based Twitter clients.
Yeah, that was when supposedly Steve Jobs was with the New York Times people in New York, and one of the executives tweeted out from the iPad, and then they slapped
were killed
down, and it was
on
pulled off Twitter like hours later or something like that. That's the rumor.
I believe it. Just because I like to believe things like that. I have no reason to believe that otherwise. But let's see here. Apple is reportedly tempering the expectations of the iPad's launch and the content deals that they're going to be having, specifically with the book deals, right? Looks like they're focusing more on TV stuff rather than TV and movies and that kind of thing for the iPad rather than the book deals because they're not coming together fast enough. Is that what you've heard, Jeff?
You know, I have a slightly different take on that. And yes, I've heard the exact same thing. I have a feeling that the book deals have been coming together very easily and very quickly. And so Apple isn't having to focus as much time there. And so the company's spending more time focusing on the TV and movie content for the iPad. And it's not that they're just ditching the print content to focus on the video content.
Yeah, they haven't really given any indication that they're not focusing on the book stuff other than the fact that iBooks won't be included with the iPad. You have to go download it, which is a little weird. And I think that's the only bit of evidence that gives support to that rumor. Otherwise, if you go to the iPad site on Apple's page, then you'll see the iBook store right there featured and you can read about it and learn about it.
Yeah, you know the thing about iBooks not being included on the iPad? I do find that to be weird, but on the other hand, maybe not so much because you have a core set of applications that are the same across all of the iPhone OS-based devices. And then you have some other applications that you can add to the devices based on the other things you want to do. So you can get the remote app, you can get the Keynote remote app, and then once the iPad is out, you can get the iBooks app. And those are just like periphery applications as opposed to core applications. So maybe that's why they're doing it as a separate download. I would assume it would make OS updates across the board easier for Apple.
That is
true.
If the
iBooks application isn't included in that core set.
Now that's a good point. I completely agree now. I agree with you. Because, you know, if you look at the, you know, they have the Contacts application as a separate app, which on the iPhone doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but that's now a core feature of the iPad. And that's always been a core feature of the iPhone OS, as well as really all of the applications, I think, other than, you know, we've seen some updates with Google Maps where, hey, let's get an entire new OS update to update one application. But yeah, I do like that idea. Separating the apps makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think, too, that Apple recognizes on the iPad that, you know, not everybody's buying it as a book reader might necessarily want the books. I mean, there are going to be people that just aren't interested in iBooks. They're using their iPad for something completely different.
Yeah,
sure. And you have the people that don't use MobileMe. So why include iDisk and WebGallery?
Right.
Yeah. What do you think about the rumor that Apple's trying to get people to, or the studios to move TV show episodes down to 99 cents? I think that'd be fantastic. I think that would help a lot with the rate of downloads of TV shows in the iTunes store, because I still feel like I feel like a dollar, I guess it's $2, $2 to $3 for a TV show is just too much.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. I thought the rumor was actually not a rumor, and that there were networks that were already talking about doing at least limited run of 99 cent episodes. And NPR is one of the companies doing that.
Are they doing that right now?
Yeah, I think NPR has already started a 99 cent test phase.
Yeah, but that's NPR. They don't have anything good.
Wow. Yeah, they do.
I'm kidding.
Sad inside.
I'm kidding. That was supposed to be a joke, but nobody laughed. So now I look like a jerk.
Whoa.
Boo. Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
It's like if you made an Abraham Lincoln joke.
I'm like the people on Twitter now. Sorry.
You can't touch Abraham Lincoln?
Too soon.
Okay.
Wasn't there a rumor that was it CBS was doing that or something too? Did that not? I never went to look. And I'll tell you why. And maybe this is the problem. Maybe this answers the question for me. And that is that 99 cents is probably still too expensive, because guess what? I have Boxy and I have Hulu and I have Netflix streaming, and I can get pretty much any TV show anytime I want for free.
Yeah. I think TV shows are more less valuable than most music, to be honest, because how many times do you rewatch an episode of a TV show? There may be some good episodes from a TV show or good seasons and stuff like that, but for the most part, I watch an episode and I'm done. But with music, I listen to it over and over.
All right, I'm taking us down a rat hole.
Okay, go.
Boxy. All right, so I hacked my Apple TV the other day and installed Boxy, and then went to start looking for shows for, just stuff that isn't available on Netflix streaming. I don't feel like buying through iTunes, but I just want to watch legitimately. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised at how little I could find. Like 4 or 5 episodes from a season of a show. That's been running for 8 years, and
that's Hulu. Oh, and it's if you're looking at the current season, were you looking at current seasons? Because Hulu will only leave an episode up for like 1 or 2 weeks, and then they pull it down.
No, I was looking at past seasons, because there's several TV shows that I used to watch, and the networks do really stupid things, especially here in Denver, where they'll preempt the season opener of a show that was a cliffhanger, so that they can show a football game. And I know for a lot of people, that's a big thing. Oh, I got to see the football game. But then they don't reschedule the show. And then I'm just gone. I mean, if that season opener isn't there, you've lost my interest.
And they don't put it back on at all. Here in California, at least in Southern California, usually what ends up happening is they air it at like 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning. Then at least my TiVo picks it up.
Yeah. The two seasons or series that come to mind right away. I was watching the Sarah Connor Chronicles, and I was watching Smallville, and the season openers for both of those were preempted for some other event. I think it was sporting events in both cases, and they didn't run the episodes again later on, and so I was just gone.
So they ran the episodes right after the game, is what you're saying?
No, they didn't run them at all.
Oh,
so. Yeah, so you pick up in the season without seeing the first episode of that season. And so I stopped watching Smallville a couple seasons ago because that happened. And then what became the last season of the Sarah Connor Chronicles, I didn't watch because they didn't show the season opener.
Yeah, forget that.
I was going to say, because on Boxy for me, I just went back and watched, because I had totally missed all of V, and mm-hmm. I just watched that through Boxy.
That's a cool show.
Maybe I should go watch that, because right now I'm feeling like I wasted half an hour of my life to build a patch stick for my Apple TV and set everything up and then play with it and go, really? There's not a damn thing I want to watch. What
V is good. You should check out V. That'd be worth it.
Something that happened with the Beta 2 software that confused me at first was they moved all the TV shows are in the TV section now instead of it used to be in the apps section.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to TV,
I was looking in the wrong place for something.
And then you go to TV and then within TV it starts off with your TV, which is the stuff you have locally, but then there's a TV library and you go in there and then everything's organized by show.
I need to go check that out.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to do everything from inside the Boxy app on my Apple TV.
And yeah, you know, the interface has apps and then it has TV shows and it has movies. I don't know how it is on the Apple TV. Maybe it's different. The desktop app, you might take a look at the desktop app and see if it's the same. I'm going to have to hack Boxy back onto my Apple TV. I did it way back when, but then
it was really easy.
When I hooked up my Mini to my television, Boxy was just better there than it was on my Apple TV, so I just kind of gave up on it.
It was quicker.
I think it's more featured, but I don't know. I don't want to misquote because I have not looked at the new Boxy beta, which is way better than the new Boxy beta.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good overall. And I installed the Boxy remote app on my iPhone, which you really need to do because trying to do it from just the Apple remote,
that's a pain.
Is it? Yeah, it's a real
and the way that the way that the Boxy application works is completely different from how the Apple TV interface works. It does it differently. It's weird. But
you actually have to exit the application to get back to the rest of your Apple TV.
Yeah, there's strange things. But you use the ATV USB creator, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So go check that out. That's what you want. ATV USB creator if you're an Apple TV person, but we should hop back on the rails here.
So yeah, to bring it back on the rails, I mean, the point I was trying to make is that through all these other mechanisms, you can get TV for free. So I think Apple really needs to get done is the Netflix model, where I pay $5 a month and I can just stream any TV show that happens to be on iTunes, or $8 a month or whatever it is. You know, so $8 a month I have with Netflix, I have access to streaming and I watch tons of stuff on Netflix streaming.
Yeah, that's how I watch most of my TV too. I'd pay $5 or $8 a month, whatever, to be able to stream TV shows from
$15 a month. You know?
Yeah, I'd pay 50. That's what I'm paying right now. I still have the same set of DVDs I've had for the last 3 weeks sitting on my desk. Don't watch those. I watch Netflix all the time though. So,
would you do it just for TV?
Yeah.
Or does it have to include movies? I think if they just could get TV done and focus on that.
Well, yeah, you're right. I do a lot. I watch a lot of movies. If they're letting all of the TV shows available, they're putting them all available. I still don't think $15 is
even with the cable shows like the stuff from HBO.
But I don't watch all that stuff. You have to realize that not everybody watches all the shows. I think that $15 makes sense for
to watch all the shows.
Well, then it's not worth
it. If you could stream everything off of all the major networks and a bunch of the cable channels, like there's a bunch of stuff on Discovery I don't pay for in my cable. I could almost kill my, and maybe this is why the TV studios won't do it. I could kill my whole cable connection and just stream all my TV off of iTunes to my Apple TV. I mean, so I'd be willing to almost pay, $30.
I'll pay $10. But then again, if they roll it out, I'll totally pay for the first month and try it, and I might just get hooked. If it's good enough, Apple just needs to get it together and make a sweet streaming service for us.
Yep. Maybe they are. Maybe that's part of what they're doing with that whole thing out in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if Apple gets it done, I would imagine it would stream to the iPad and it would stream to your iPhone.
Of course,
too.
It would stream to the iPhone. You know what's fun is that whenever the internet doesn't work at my house, I tether up and I watch Hulu over my iPhone. It's not a problem. It works just fine. Sorry, AT&T.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you guys say about WinTech being the issue behind the slight iPad delay? According to DigiTimes, they're saying that WinTech has had issues with creating the touchscreens for the iPads.
Oh, a banana. Bullshit.
Okay.
I don't think there's any delays.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Gruber said that there might be some software delays, and I agree with that.
Maybe, but I'm not even seeing that. I think that this delay, and I have to use the term delay very loosely in this case, because we're talking 3 days.
Yeah.
I mean, that's okay, in the grand scheme of things, that's not even late.
Yeah.
Right.
I think this all goes back to getting the licensing for radio frequency approval stuff taken care of. I think that's all it is. If they had a hardware-based delay because WinTech or any other company wasn't getting parts to Foxconn, this would not be a thing where we're seeing the iPad come out 3 days after March. We'd be looking at 3 weeks or a month after March.
Well, they're also indicating that there's a shortage, and I think that is that what the general thought is that the iPads are in not – they don't have a whole lot of them. They don't have a surplus of iPads. They're kind of keeping it tight.
Well, I'm sure they're keeping it tight, but this whole shortage thing, I think that's – wrong also. I think that all spawns out of that one analyst that cited unnamed sources without any corroboration that we know of, that there were these part delivery supply issues. And that has just kind of snowballed into this whole thing about, we can't get parts, and so everything's delayed, and that's why everything's behind schedule, and there won't be enough iPads. And the part suppliers all came out and said, no, that's not the case. We're getting parts where they need to go. WinTech even filed a statement with the stock exchange, what would that be, in Tokyo or something, saying, no, we're on track. Everything we're doing is right in line with expectations.
Yeah.
I think they've got pre-orders far enough in advance also on the shortage thing that – and they did – the launch the way they did it because, to a certain degree, just my theory, they can gauge how many they have to build. They don't have to, you know, they didn't have to go out and build a huge surplus. They know how many they need to fulfill now, and they just need to crank up whatever manufacturing facilities they need to churn them out now. And especially with the Wi-Fi plus 3G orders, I mean, they've got a good solid lead time to know what demand is going to be, and I don't think there's going to be shortages. I think one conversation we could potentially have is what's your guys' feeling on, not software glitches holding up the launch, but I'm curious to see, you know, is this going to be one of those devices that's going to have, how many problems are we going to have after it launches, I guess is what the question I'm getting to.
I think we're going to have a lot of complaints about the software.
That's my fear. I have a bigger fear that, you know, these things are going to get out and there's going to be the typical bugs that are found, and that's going to get a lot of buzz.
I hope it's not going to be too crazy.
How severe and how real are those things going to be? Or is it just going to be another one of those the small percentage of people that are impacted being that really vocal percentage that always happens at a new launch?
I think that because the iPad isn't as mission critical as a phone is with the iPhone, I think it's not going to be as bad, but I feel like we're going to be seeing some significant flaws in the software right away. And that's, you know, just due to what it is. It's a big change, even though it is still pretty much just iPhone OS that you have on your iPhone. It's a different resolution. There are a lot of different things going on.
Yeah. See, I worry a little more about the hardware issues than
that would be
software
bad.
Because the software is pretty rich in terms of the operating system. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been around long enough. Yeah, it's a different device, but I don't think there's that many changes to where there's going to be really software issues. You know, I'm curious about things like the LCD.
That's my biggest concern.
About what?
The display itself.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But the rest of the components are pretty much what you already have in an iPhone or an iPod Touch. The big change is the screen. And I think if there's going to be a hardware problem, it's going to be in the screens. And I'm hoping there isn't. I hope the problems we have to deal with are software related, because that's an easy fix. We just wait for the update to come out and we bitch and moan for a week or two until it does. And then everything works fine. And then we all go, ha ha ha, we're early adopters.
Yeah, hardware problems are no fun.
Well, and I have a feeling, you know, even with the screen, it might end up being something like we saw with wasn't there an issue with the early iPhones with sort of a casting, color casting issue?
Yeah, there was a weird screen issue. Some of the models of the screens had a different shade, and only people who were really irritated about everything got annoyed about this and spoke up. But for the most part, you could still...
Didn't they fix that in software too, though?
It might have been like a color profile thing. It might have been a color profile thing. I don't remember.
Now, do you remember when the iPhone 3G came out, how people started freaking out about the display because it had a different color cast than the original iPhone? And actually, I have a first-gen iPhone, iPhone 3G, first-gen iPod Touch, and second-gen iPod Touch. Or maybe it's an early third-gen. I can't remember which. Doesn't matter. I can lay all four of them side by side, and the screen color is different on every one.
Yeah.
And you know, and part of that is look at the device. How are we going to color calibrate a screen on that? We have no way to do that. So having this variation across all the screens is no surprise to me. And it's exactly why I'll never use an iPhone, an iPod Touch, and probably an iPad for color critical work.
Yeah. Although, well, that's an interesting thing to think about because Apple might want to think about putting a color adjustment controls in the iPad at least, because this could be a great device for creatives working on, you know, color sensitive stuff.
If Apple built in a way for us to be able to color calibrate the iPod Touch, or excuse me, the iPad, I would have to go change my pants. That's how cool that would be.
I think they might do that. You know,
it's not a bad idea. They put in
an option to use a Dvorak keyboard on the iPad. Although it's a hardware one, I don't think you can switch to Dvorak layout in the software, although you can change to some other weird layouts that may be Dvorak. I think that we're going to see some interesting options on the iPad that we don't see on the iPhone OS.
I'm okay with that.
Yep.
I mean, it's a bigger device. It serves a different part of the computing spectrum. And putting in the ability to make some other changes to how you use it compared to an iPhone or iPod Touch, totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to move on to some more stuff. We have some more to discuss and our iPhone picks coming up in just a second, but I need to talk about our wonderful sponsor, and that is Citrix with GoToAssist Express. If you guys are like me and probably Adam and Jeff, we're our family's technical support agents because we're the guys with the computers, so we get called up by friends and family. I actually got a call from my dad today and a call from some other friend regarding computer issues, and they could have benefited from GoToAssist Express if I wasn't in my car when they called me. So what GoToAssist Express allows you to do is to, here's how it works. You get a call from someone, hey, I need help with my computer, and you say, okay. You open up the application on your computer, and you say, go to this URL. And they type it in, and then, okay, type in this PIN number. And they type it in, and then within not even a minute, 30 seconds, I would say, maybe even less, you're able to see their computer, see what's running on their computer, see what the components are, see what the installed applications are. You're able to chat with them. You're able to send files back and forth. You can control the screen, see exactly what's there, and help them out. Resolve the problem in no time, because as you know, if you've ever done, you know, a support call over the phone, it's one of the most frustrating things. I was talking to my dad last night. He said, how do you get to the power search in iTunes? They changed it, didn't they? And yeah, they recently, you know, with iTunes, what are we at, 9? They changed the store layout a bit, and he couldn't figure out where the power search was. And I couldn't figure out why he couldn't find it, because it's right there. It's right underneath your account name. And I said, well, it's just right there. And he said, I can't find it. All I see is this stuff. And after 10 minutes of me thinking about it, I finally realized that, oh, he has his screen resolution at 800 by 600. And so the iTunes window is squashed down, but I didn't, you know, again, I was in my car, unfortunately, talking to him about this. So I couldn't use GoToAssist. And he's also kind of weirded out by GoToAssist because it's magic and he's confused by it. But if I had GoToAssist, I could have brought it up and seen and said, oh, just change the resolution. I could have changed it for him. It's a fantastic application. If you do professional tech support, if you're your family's tech support, it's just an amazing thing to have in your tool belt, your virtual tech support tool belt. You can try it free for 30 days by going to gotoassist.com/Ally. You have to put in your credit card number, and it'll start charging you once that 30 days rolls over. But if you don't want it to do that, as soon as you sign up, you can go in there and clear out your credit card information. They don't hold you to that. So you can use it for the 30 days without worrying about it, no risk. And if you want to continue using it, you can pay for it. It's 128-bit SSL encrypted. It's very secure. You can actually do up to 8 sessions at once. Like I said, you can get a full system profile. You can see all the apps that are running on, you know, if you're looking at a Windows system and you think maybe it's the virus software that's running in the background, you can check that out. You can see what's running and tell them to turn it off or turn it off yourself. Send and receive files, integrated live chat. It's fantastic. Go to assist.com/Ally. Try it free for 30 days and support the iPhone Ally or Chatcast or whatever we are by supporting Citrix with gotoassist.com/Ally. And with that, we're moving on. iPad stuff. I think we're out of it. Out of the iPad stuff, actually. We're done. We have T-Mobile. One of their CEOs said that they might be getting the iPhone in later this year or next year. But I think that's the story that keeps recurring every few months, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I think more and more these days I get the feeling that AT&T has a lock and they're going to continue to have a lock for a long time in the States.
Forever and ever.
Yeah, because they just keep renewing it. It gets close and everybody, we think it's going to open up to the other carriers and then an iPad deal happens, right? Mm-hmm. And I no doubt that to get the kind of pricing they got for the iPad 3G that Apple made some concessions on the iPhone to AT&T. I'm almost positive of it. I have no proof, but I mean, how else did that deal get done?
I think that AT&T is doing the best job in the States on GSM. So there are two GSM carriers, T-Mobile and AT&T, and I think that AT&T is still doing the better of the two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that, although I'm sure some T-Mobile fans will disagree with me. But
yeah, well, there's just not as much 3G coverage in the U.S. on T-Mobile.
Yeah, I've talked to people who are on T-Mobile, and that's the story I get.
It's better?
They like T-Mobile, but no, they say that it's not as good as AT&T. People who are reasonable about it.
Yeah.
You know, my experience when I was playing with the Nexus One, which was on T-Mobile, the AT&T coverage in the Denver area was far superior.
And I think that is how it is around the States.
I will tell you, AT&T right now is having major issues in San Diego. I don't know if we're starting to get the San Francisco, New York effect now, but I'm starting to get impacted where I wasn't before, and I had been hearing rumors that San Diego was supposedly bad on AT&T, and I don't know what's changed, but I'm getting a lot more dropped calls these days.
And on AT&T?
Starting to really irritate me. Yes.
Mm.
Like, that's my phone, I'll be talking to someone, and it'll just go dead.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's happened in the last month at least half a dozen times that I can think of.
Yeah, it's we haven't had a whole lot of that, at least in my area, the Rockford area. AT&T service is solid at this point. We used to have some bad areas around town, but it's pretty great. And even in Chicago, for the most part, it's pretty good. There have been some times where it's been a little bit weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing for me, and maybe someone can explain this to me who knows something about cell phone technology, but when it happens, I have 4 or 5 bars.
Probably just a congestion problem, right?
I don't know what causes it. It's not a signal quality problem. It's just like it dies.
Too many kids yeah. on there.
In places where I've never had a problem before. So I don't know what's going on, but I hope they get it resolved and fix it.
Yeah.
It's weird. Just weird.
Do you have the 800 megahertz in your area now?
I don't think San Diego is very spread out. I mean, it's a huge place. It's just, the downtown is tiny compared to most other downtowns in terms of just if you look at the area. And there's not a lot of huge tall buildings. So
you don't need
the
800 thing?
Problem.
Or 850? Huh? You wouldn't need that in your area? Is
no,
what you're saying?
I don't think it would benefit. I don't think it would benefit from it. So I just can't fathom to guess what's going on or why it's happening. Because like I said, it's not a signal quality problem. It's just broken problem.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I think it's time for our iPhone picks, unless you guys have any other interesting news items to talk about, because we're out of bits that I think we should start up. Should we do the delicious thing? Because Leo does the bookmarks where you can submit show talking points for each of the shows. And I like that idea. Do you do any of that, Adam?
I have a delicious account, and I think I do have a delicious tag for submitting MacCast things. But mostly, no, people just send me email. Or I use my forum to get topics that people are discussing.
Okay. I'll look into that and see what I decide, because I don't really use Delicious and I don't know
how it
works.
Maybe you should use the Twitter.
Yeah.
That's right. Use the Twitter.
I can set up a well, as soon as we settle on a name, I'll set up a Twitter account and then we can have people send in Twitters.
Yeah. I you know, Delicious is cool. I just never got into it.
Yeah. Neither did I.
But I'd be happy to try
again. I have so many other things that I'm playing with all the time. I never got into Delicious either.
Yep. I mean, what about using a Twitter hashtag?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. We could do that. We'll figure it out. We'll figure out what the hashtag is by next time. And by that,
maybe
I mean,
it's too short to be able to, you know, submit a good topic. I don't know. Email always worked for me. I don't never found email to be broken.
We'll figure it out. All right. iPhone picks time. Jeff, you want to go first?
Sure. And I'm making a big, bold assumption that I haven't done this app before. Have I talked about Type War before?
I don't think so. It sounds fun, though.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Type War is very cool. So it's an application where, well, it's a game. And what you do is you look at a letter, like, you know, from the alphabet on your iPhone or iPod touch screen, and then you get to choose which font it is. So like right now I'm looking at the letter Z.
Oh,
and
boy.
It says, is it Times New Roman or is it Helvetica New? And so in this case I knew it was Helvetica New, or which is actually Helvetica New Yay, sorry. So if I didn't
have serifs.
Right. And yeah, so in this case, yes, I knew. And if I didn't correct the new yay thing, I know someone would have called me on it. And, you know, then there's Times New Roman and Optima. But it gets progressively more difficult as you go along. And then you can also log into the game server and it'll keep track of your score. And so you can see how you're faring against your friends. It's just this wonderfully cool little application, and it's so simple. It's just here's a font. What's the typeface?
And yeah, it's this called looks cool. Can you go head to head? Is there a head to head mode?
I don't know if there is.
I think that should be next on their list of things to do.
That would be very cool if you could do. I don't think there is a head to head mode.
I don't think I know anything about typefaces. I think I would be bad at this game. I would like to know more about typefaces. Maybe this. Do you think this would be good as a trainer, or is it just
absolutely
okay?
Because it explains, like, you know, when you pick a typeface, it tells you what it is, and then it gives you a little info thing. Well, actually, that just gives you your stats. But as you look at the typefaces and you get more correct, you start to learn what it is that you're seeing, because there's a lot of subtle differences in typefaces. And there's a reason why this is an amazing art. And so, you can kind of get that appreciation for the different typefaces and learn what they look like.
Yeah. Looks cool. Okay, it's called Type War. It's $1.99. And it looks like an awesome application. Thank you, Jeff.
Sure.
Adam?
All right, I'm going with a game this time around. Again, I guess, because I did a game last week. Have you guys checked out Angry Birds?
No. I've heard about it. I heard it's a good game.
It's a very good game. Totally, totally addictive. Basically, it's I don't know if you call it a slingshot catapult physics style game. the concept is there's these birds, and then there's these pigs, and the pigs steal the birds' eggs, and the birds get pissed and are going to exact revenge on the pigs. So the pigs are holed out in all these little structures.
Oh, this looks cool.
Made of different materials, wood, glass, stone, and you basically catapult via slingshot the birds at the pigs and try and knock down their structures and crush the pigs. So basic concept, but you get different kinds of birds. So, you know, you start out with your basic birds that just run into things and knock them over. But as the game progresses, you unlock more birds, like birds that can do little egg bombs, birds that you can rocket fire, birds that explode like grenades. And what's cool about it is you run through the levels. My only complaint, I guess, is that there's not a ton of levels, and sort of when it's done, it's done. So it's pretty easy to progress quickly through the game. But you earn 1 to 3 stars for each level, depending on how many birds it takes you to sort of crush the pigs. So you could go back and try and figure out. This has got a little puzzle element to it. So if you can hit the structure in the right place and launch the bird at the right angle, you can, you know, defeat the pigs with less birds. And it's a lot of fun. I think it also has, of course, one of the online. I wish they could standardize those online high score things. This one uses something called Crystal, which I think was a Rolo. Is it Rolio? Or I can never remember the name of that.
Rolando?
You know, Rolando. I think that used the same system that game uses. So a lot of fun. I think I can't remember how much it was. I should have looked this up.
It's 99 cents.
99 cents.
It's a full version. There's also a light version of Angry Birds if you want to try it out.
Oh yeah, you can try it for free. That's right.
I'm downloading it right now.
I'm downloading it too.
So it's kind of hilarious and comedic and fun, and the graphics are kind of cool. And it's a good all around game. Like I said, probably the only complaint, and I'm sure they can fix it with an update with that adds like an app store update where you can buy more levels.
Cool. Angry Birds.
Angry Birds.
Two words. Light and 99 cents. Okay, so my pick is the PayPal update. Have you guys checked out the PayPal app? It was kind of lame initially. It's PayPal. Like, who cares? It's PayPal. But now it's really cool. Because you can get access to all of your PayPal stuff. You can check out your account information. You can turn. You can check stuff out. You can see all your transactions. You can go through all that stuff. But you can also, I guess the coolest part about the PayPal app now is that it has Bump built in.
You know, the Bump thing is cool. But what I think is even cooler is that it does that bill splitting thing. So if you're at a restaurant, and a bunch of people that you're with go, oh, I forgot my money.
Yeah.
You can figure out what the bill is and then send them how much they owe you as a PayPal payment bill.
Yeah. Yeah. You can
right
say.
From the app.
Now, does that only work if you've bumped, or can you just send the.
Yeah, I think it works. Like if you just send, you can send them an email with
the
little embedded PayPal link, you know, click this and then put in your credit card number and it'll pay me.
It says, hey, you owe me money, dude.
Yeah.
Can you build in the fee on top of it so that you don't get shortchanged $3?
You can.
I haven't had any friends screw me yet. So
that's my only problem with PayPal is that, you know, PayPal takes their little PayPal cut. So your friend owes you $20 and you end up getting $18.93.
Yeah. Well, the thing about PayPal, when you send money to someone, there are two options for sending money. There's as a personal and as a business. So if you send money as a business transaction, I think that's what it, or maybe as a purchase, I think if it's a purchase or a personal thing, I'm logging into my PayPal so I can check out what the exact verbiage is. But one will take the money, let's see. Okay. So if it's for a purchase and I'm sending money to somebody, they will get that amount less the PayPal amount. If it's a personal send money transaction, then they will send the full dollar amount that you typed in, and then they'll take the amount out of your account additionally. So they'll get the full amount and you'll.
Oh, out of the payee account.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
No. No, they won't. They'll take it out of the payer's account.
Payer, not the payee's account.
Yeah, yeah. So they'll get the full amount, and you'll get pulled a little bit of extra money. So you have to just look at which options you have available for doing the PayPal. But Yeah, so my first opportunity I had to use it was last night when Ed Kirk gave me a call and said, "Hey, you coming to the party? You want to pick up some beer for me?" And he's 21. I wasn't buying beer for a minor. but I went and I grabbed some beer and showed up, and he said, "You know, I have a 20. You want to split a 20?" And I said, "Let's try the PayPal app instead." And so we downloaded the PayPal app, hit the bump button, and then we bumped, and then he just had the option to send money or request money, and he sent me $9. And it was really easy and really cool.
So to get this straight, you went and bought beer, gave it to a guy, and then he bumped you.
Yes.
Yep. That's pretty much how it went down.
That's how it works.
Got it.
You can also, there are also a lot of cool options. The interface has been changed, and I haven't played with it enough. And honestly, for some reason, the PayPal network isn't working right now. I can't log in to the app.
Sorry, I'm laughing because
there's people bumping all over the country.
No, it's PayPal. Don't. Yeah. We'll go down a rat hole if you get me going.
Oh, here it goes. PayPal's working now. They heard you talking about it and they said, "Oh, we better get it together." So you can split the check. Uh-huh. I've never understood splitting the check because you just figure out which people's meals cost what, but you can also do
it's like Jeff said, when you know you have those times when everybody's forgot their money or everybody's like, "Oh, I only have a credit card," and you just go, "Oh, then I'll put it all on my card and everybody else pay me."
Yeah, so you can do a collect money thing.
Send everybody a PayPal link, and then when they get home, they can just pay you at their leisure. You don't have to do the whole adding up all the cash thing.
Yeah, there's a collect money option as well. So you can do collect money and say, there are three people that I need to get money from for this transaction. And, you know, each of them owes me $5 or whatever, or the total amount is something. And then each contributor will give you a certain amount, and then you bump and then you're good. Yeah. It's really cool. I love it now. I'm going to keep it on my phone. I wasn't keeping it on my phone in the past. So yeah, it's much more useful. And if you don't want to do the bump thing, it still has, all the great features of PayPal. You can send money using an email or phone address.
They just add support for the squared thing.
Ooh, yeah. Well, I think the idea with Square is they want to actually work the opposite direction, is have their service be the de facto option, and then whatever card reader you want to go with, you can do that. And you can use the Square reader, but you can also use some other reader like the Mophi.
Right. So yeah, that's right. Because they go right to your bank account, which is almost even better than through the PayPal thing.
Yeah, but if you have a PayPal debit card like I do, it's like having another bank.
Woo-hoo. That's a good point.
Yeah, which I like. So
the PayPal debit card is actually really cool.
That is. I highly recommend that. That's my secondary non-iPhone pick, is the PayPal debit card. I'm a big fan. You do have to pay a little more in fees, but it's not much and it's really convenient. So PayPal, the app is free. You have to have a PayPal account, but it's awesome. So check it out.
Who doesn't have a PayPal account by now? That's what I can't figure out.
Weird people.
Luddites. Broke people.
Broke people.
Let's not disparage our listeners. We love them all, even if you don't have a PayPal.
I wasn't saying there's anything wrong with that. It's just, if you don't have any money at all, why would you need a PayPal account?
That's true.
You wouldn't. That would be futile.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it'd be like someone that has a peanut allergy going out and buying lots of peanuts. Why would they do that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So lots of analogies here. It's been a good show. The action item is the podcast name. So if you have any suggestions, I think we're going to get away from This Week in iPhone and go with something else, maybe iPhone Chatcast, or if you want to riff off of that and go with something else, send us your suggestions, podcast@iPhoneAlley.com, or you can send a Twitter to me, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And I don't recommend following me unless you enjoy, nonsense, because I don't tweet a lot about iPhone stuff, just as a warning, so I don't kill anybody's expectations. You can also, you have all that for the podcast show name. You can find our show notes and the picks. A list of our picks are at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. You can send a request for that stuff to the email address, but I'm not going to get back to you because you should just Google it or something. iPhoneLA.com/podcast is where you get the show notes and the pics. You can send feedback to podcast@iPhoneLA.com. Check out GoToAssist.com/Ally for a free 30-day trial of GoToAssist Express. It's awesome. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer at MacObserver.com and Twitter.com/JGamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Hey, sure thing. It's a wonderful, wild ride every week.
It is.
I never
it's
know
fun.
Where we're going to end up.
Neither do I. That's why I like it. And Adam Christensen's at the MacCast, MacCast.com. And Twitter.com/MattCast. And thank you so much for being here, Adam, as always.
Yes, sir. Thank you for letting me hang out.
Yeah. And we're going to do, eventually we're going to have some, I'm going to mix up the guests and get some new faces in here and old friendly friends from the past. I don't know what I'm talking about. People we've seen on the show before. I've just been crazy busy with moving iPhone Alley and all that stuff. So I think that Merlin wants to come on at some point and do his new list of iPhone picks. He stopped me at Macworld and told me that I have to have him on and talk about all of his new iPhone obsessions. So we'll do that soon as I this stuff dies down and I'm able to remember that kind of thing. Because as much as I enjoy Merlin, I don't write things down all the time because I'm lazy. So
you just need Merlin to hang out with you all the time. And he can just follow you around and say things like, Michael, do this. Michael, do this. Michael, do this.
Well, the thing about, and I think Merlin will say this, is that he is just as disorganized as everybody else, and that's why he needs the systems, right?
So maybe your system could be Merlin.
And then I could be a system for him, and then we could just go back and forth.
I don't think any good can come from that.
Okay.
Twitter.com. Let's give it a try. This will be great entertainment.
Twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And I think that's it. Another iPhone chat podcast is done.
An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone.
So you're not going to change it to Internet Communicator Weekly?
We could do, how do I sign my emails? I forget.
I signed your emails, fuck you.
No, I say sent from like a Palm Pilot or something.
We have communicators.
Yeah. So the communicator.
Yeah, that's the name of the show.
Communicator Cast.
No, we have communicators.
Oh.
What's that?
I like that idea.
You but it started weird. Off with that little chirping sound from when Captain Kirk would whip out his communicator.
What about the chirp from Boost mobile phones?
Or you could use the Boost chirp, sure.
Yeah, because with Boost mobile, you always know where you're at. So when you hear the chirp, it's clear. You can hear it wherever you are, and you know where your homie's at.
That's right. Where you at?
Yeah, where you at? And then Adam says, where are you at?
I'm in my English class where I can learn how to fucking speak. Oh.
Bloopers, bloopers, bloopers.
You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all... born with 10 of them. We're gonna use our fingers.